Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Happy Teal Tuesday. Guess who wore teal today? I did. I did my job.
Congrats on doing your job.
Also, congrats,
doing
Curtis.
Bare minimum.
I know. Congrats, Curtis, on celebrating yet another year. Happy birthday, friend.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. Yes. To our own Curtis Rogers here working hard on his birthday. We appreciate it, my friend. We are going to get to a little bit more of UConn, but I do have to open the show by saying props to one Michael Bumpus for calling a 15-point victory for the Huskies. 75-60 over the Boilermakers last night. Battle of two number
Y'all
one
seeds.
Y'all
looked at me crazy, too. Y'all looked at me crazy.
Did I look at you crazy?
You did.
Are you sure? Mm-hmm. I feel like I almost said, oh, I think that, too. No, I thought Purdue would give them a tougher time. Like, I thought that UConn would win. They'd been so dominant the entire time. But I thought that Purdue would give them a tougher run. I felt confident about that prediction in the first half, and then it completely fell apart.
Yeah, UConn, well coached. Man, I love their coach too, man. You listen to him speak after the game, press conferences. He lets his cool side slip a little bit. Like, you see it. He'd be like, yo, hey, so, and then by the way.
And then he freestyles.
And I'm like, okay, all right, I see you, coach. I can imagine you in the locker room talking to your kids. But, yeah, it was a good game last night. Battle of the Bigs. And Edie did his thing, though. Don't get it twisted.
He really did.
37 points he had?
Would you say this about the Husky performance?
Go Dogs.
Because they're Huskies.
Go Dogs of UConn.
Go Dogs of UConn.
We'll create another cut from that and cut off of UConn.
That's just more work for me.
I know, you're right. And not on today. Not on this sacred day, Curtis.
Not on your day.
Not on your day, Curtis. We heard a lot from Scott Service this morning with Brock and Salk. We're going to spend the first 30-ish minutes of today's show kind of covering our bases here, no pun intended, with the Mariners. Coming up at 10:30, we're going to spend more time on what Service had to say. We're going to focus more on just Luis Castillo to open our show, because it was a no good, very weird, bad start to the season for Luis that continued in this opener, home opener, for the Toronto Blue Jays. Bump, I was really, really hoping and have been hoping that they're just going to have a game when they get right. They're just going to have a game when maybe the starting pitching comes out and looks phenomenal. Maybe the bats get hot. Maybe something happens. And there were some weird, not anomalies, but just some weirdness with this one, with a few of these outs that I'll talk about in a little bit. But what'd you make of Castillo's day?
It was a tough one, man. Here's the thing about Castillo. He got ahead in a couple of these counts, but then just missed a spot. And you listen to Service talk about where he's missing, and you listen to Castillo, he's just missing over the plate. Mm-hmm. He's the type of guy that gets guys to chase, and that's just not happening right now. Again, it's early in the season. His whiff rate last year was 30%. This year is at 18%. His chase contact last year was at 51%. It's at 65%. Yep. He's just not hitting his spots. When he's missing, he's laying up a nice little meatball, and they're getting after it. But here's what's encouraging for me about Castillo, and I don't know if he has the greatest poker face of all time, but during the game, after the game, when he's speaking through his translator, there is no flinch in him.
No.
I believe everything he's saying. You know, I'm working hard. Things are going to get better. I've gone through a type of slump like this last year. Things will be fine. So that's what I need. He is the pilot of a flight with hella turbulence.
He's coming
on the mic and saying, all right, guys, we have a little turbulence here, about 30,000 feet. Don't you worry about it. We'll get you there nice safe.
Meanwhile, I'm screaming.
And that does something to me. I sit there and I listen to the captain. I go, oh, we good. We good. This made me believe. That's what Castillo's doing, but no, he hasn't had his best outings so far this year. Just missing his spots. That's what it comes down to. There's still movement on his pitches. There's still some stank and some nastiness on it. It's just when you got to close them out, he's laying them up right now.
Someone said, let me guess what you're going to say. It's still early. What a loser comment. It is early, but also maybe you didn't listen in any way to our open yesterday when Bump and I both said it is not too early to say the Mariners have a problem. So
yeah,
now,
thanks.
For the next, I don't know, however long it takes, we're going to figure out what that problem is and what those problems are and how to fix them. And so that's when we're starting today. One of the problems is that Luis Castillo doesn't look like the ace that you know, the ace that you need, more importantly. Here's Scott Service, Bump mentioned, what he's seen from Castillo in his start so far.
The quality of the pitches, you know, whether it's fastball, velocity, or movement, the slider, the changeup, they're all about the same as what we've seen in the past. It really comes down to execution. And, you know, we saw it last night. You know, there's certain times he would get ahead in the count and all of a sudden the ball leaks back over the plate, in the middle of the plate, and it's not a quality, you know, 0-2, 1-2, 2-2 pitch. There are some other ones he threw off the plate, and Schneider kind of reaches the bat out and pokes a single into right field. But I think the execution and kind of like, and we've seen this from Luis. That's why he's just been such a special pitcher for so long. When he gets somebody two strikes and he gets up on top of them, mm-hmm. he buries them. He kills them. And we haven't seen his ability to do that. Just hasn't been as consistent. And it's hurt him.
That last part is most interesting to me, Bump, because if you look at the RBI scoring runs, so they didn't have any home runs. So everything that every run driven in for the Blue Jays was an RBI, maybe an RBI single, double, whatever. In three of those, of the four, Luis was ahead in the count.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not being able to close them out. And you know what I don't know what the numbers are on this, but this is just what I observed over the past couple of years, man. When he's punching you out, he's making you chase high. Mm-hmm. Like that thing is rising on you. He's making you think he's going to be right in the sweet spot, and bam, you're chasing. He's just not hitting his spots like that right now. But what's encouraging is that you look at the velocity on his pitches, it's still there. The movement is still there. It's just the command. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that your ace isn't performing like the ace. But again, I watch the pitches. I'm listening to him speak. I'm listening to service speak. And he's going to have many more opportunities to get this thing right. But the more we see him, the more we see him struggle, the more concerned that we're going to be. But what you see is real. The movement is there. The velocity is still there. I think I have full confidence that he's going to fix this thing.
Well, let's talk about how he fixes it. Here's Scott Servais on what needs to happen for Castillo.
Well, the first thing you look at is his stuff. His stuff is good. He's healthy. You know, so then, you know, where is it? You know, is it just not, you know, understanding, you know, you got to, you know, cut the plate in half or maybe in thirds, you know, just get the ball where it needs to go, especially when you're had an account like that against really good hitters. I mean, these guys are going to put the ball in play, but you got to make them put your pitch in play in the right spot, and we're not doing that.
So, again, you need to get that placement for some of these key pitches, meaning you're trying to close it out, you're ahead in the count, in the right spot. And for some reason, he is not doing that. Early in counts, he's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason, something just isn't happening. And Luis mentioned via his interpreter last night, and I saw this on Ryan Divish's recap, that like, hey, yeah, you know, I went through a stretch of a couple losses, like 9 losses or something, mm-hmm. With Cincinnati. However, during that stretch, he was still pitching pretty well. The team just wasn't performing around him. So this is new territory for him, I think.
It is. Is it? I mean, he's not pitching well, and the team ain't performing around him also.
That's true.
I mean, two
well,
runs
not all
ain't
of it
be
is
enough.
New territory.
Two runs ain't enough, Stacey. I mean, we're asking for 5. You get 5 the other night, you're in this thing, you know? So it's a combination of things, and I'm sure he feels some type of pressure to bring this team out of this slump, because the profile of this team was they're going to have a dominant rotation. And when your ace ain't dominant, then he naturally feels that pressure. But I love that he doesn't show that he feels that pressure. The unfortunate part, too, is that some guys are hitting the ball hard, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Julio had an exit velo 114 last night, mm-hmm. 108. Ty had a 107. Dom had a 108. But there you get a double out of one of them, a single, a ground out of lineup. It's just not consistent. You're not putting these bats together. They're squaring the ball up, but they're not also putting guys on base. I always complain about the risk, right? Runners in scoring mm-hmm. position, 0-for-3. They didn't have many opportunities to drive these guys in. Nothing's connecting right now. It seems like I've used this analogy before. It's like when you're trying to run in a dream and you can't run. When you're trying to throw punches and you can't throw punches
in
your dream.
It's not a bad analogy.
Everything just seems so hard to do right now. And I feel for these dudes, but they got to figure it out.
I'm so glad. That's a natural transition for me here, because I want to switch to just for about 5 minutes here talking about the offense. Bump, I've got a couple texts in from listeners. From the 425, doesn't matter what Luis does if they don't score runs. He's only giving up 4 runs. If the bats weren't so, they said pew, he'd be keeping us in the game. Oh, the Mariners have a terrible case of smelly bats, so pew. Another 253 says, pitching's on the back burner. We could have 11 great starts, but our offense is garbage right now. The bats need to help the pitching. It don't help pitchers to get a minute rest because our batters can't put together a good at-bat. So, again, Castillo's given up 26 hits in 15 and two-thirds innings pitch. Still 12 runs, which, like, it's not great. It's not even good, but it's also not atrocious. Like, he's giving up a lot of hits. He's giving up a lot of contact. But he's not giving up a ton of runs. I mean, You are still the only major league club, Seattle, to not score at least 6 runs in a game. So now let's flip it what the offense was doing. And Bump, you mentioned it. They had a lot of hard hit balls last night, and that's what's so weird. Now, a few of those were on home runs, 107 miles per hour off the bat for JP during a home run, 104.1 off the bat for Cal Raleigh for another home run. You got 108 for a double from Dom, 107 for a single from Ty. But then you have a ton of outs. A ton of outs, line outs that were 100-plus miles per hour off the bat. You're right. It is one of those things where you go, why is this so hard? Like, you're doing some things right, and because they're not really a team that's hit for a lot of power, but you had a lot of hard-hit balls last night. But then once you start getting a little bit of power going, they're all just going to the wrong place defensively.
Yeah, and once you stripe one, let's stripe another one. And then you know what? And then slap one out there, a little blooper. You need to connect these at-bats, and that's something that we're just not seeing. And I'm looking at – I'm going to go back to Castillo real quick. I'm looking at Castillo, and we've been talking about, and we'll continue to talk about – the approach of these pitchers now these days to where they're not really leaning on the fastball. And Castillo is the complete opposite. He's going to lean on the fastball, then try to get you to chase. I wonder, at this point of his career, do you change that? This is when you start trying to change everything, right? Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Obviously, Castillo's not going to change the way that he approaches the game. It's got him here for a reason. But that's just where we are as a fan base and as an organization at this point, is that 11 games in, you're searching to find what exactly is the problem and what's going on and how come you can't do this consistently or that consistently. Sometimes it just comes down to reps. Just keep at it, keep at it, keep at it. If something ain't working, you tweak a little bit here. I'm interested to see where Ty France is in the lineup, because he's the one bat that you've been able to rely on. My man comes back from maternity leave and has a multi-hit game, had 40 of them things last year. So I'm wondering what's going to change with this lineup. I think it comes down to just having the top of the order perform well. I believe 1-5 or 1-10 last night. Something crazy. I think Polanco was the only one with the hit. I think it's time to insert Ty France into somewhere through 1-5. I think it's time to give this man some more ABs and let him get going. He's the one thing that you've been able to count on. So, yeah, we're all GMs right now, Stacey. We're all trying to figure this thing out.
Here's what I think,
I'm up
Jerry.
For suggestions.
Yeah, I also want to recognize a tough beginning of the schedule. They were not facing the A's. They were not facing a horrible Mets offense. They were not facing a struggling Rockies team. They faced a Boston team that had pitching better than expected and split that series. They faced a Guardians team that we thought might be rebuilding but had some pretty good pieces and ended up being really solid. And then now they face Toronto, which can be cold but can also be really hot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting schedule to start the season, where you look at Toronto, you look at Cleveland, you look at the Red Sox, and you can see the flaws with every single team and say, here's the opportunity. All of these teams have great players.
Yeah.
And they've gotten the better of you.
Can I point something out? Side note.
Yes.
Toronto's ballpark is gorgeous. You seen that thing?
Yeah, renovated.
Night? Goodness,
it's
gracious.
So pretty.
It looked good.
Can I say something else? And this is going to sound very anti-American, even though I do love my country.
Whoa.
I appreciate that Rogers Centre is spelled the Canadian way with C-E-N-T-R-E. And I'm not going to propose anything. I'm not going to say we should change anything. I'm not going to go out here and sound insane. However, I prefer that spelling.
They probably spell color O-U-R at the
they
end.
Have,
yes,
they do. They do. Have like, yeah, they have like a European/British spelling.
That's
European,
interesting.
Not European. Coming, they have a British English spelling.
Stacey, that's interesting coming from you, because I believe, didn't you fail French in high school?
Dang.
I believe you
Curtis,
have shared that,
that
story.
Curtis, that is so rude of you to say when I did nothing to you. I opened the show. That is so. I opened the show by saying happy birthday.
I'm just saying,
everyone celebrate Curtis today.
I failed.
Wow, Curtis, happy birthday in French, whatever
in
that
my
is.
Junior year of high school, and I never
that
want anything
so
to do with
rude.
That.
That is so rude. That is so rude. I worked so hard in that class when I did my final project on Google Translate.
Yeah.
I feel so attacked. I don't even know where to go from here. I was going to say something in French, but I don't know. I simply don't know what to say. If only I would have passed that class. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it. headline rewrites.
Wow.
Yeah, she was really hurt.
The story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
That's so rude. You know what it is? I'm so good at speaking English that I don't have the capacity for other things.
You're still a double major.
I'm a double major.
You didn't let your French class failure define you. And that's exactly the most important thing.
That's A.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
you're
you.
You're a good husband. Look at that. Curtis, no. All right, man, we got to soften this thing up a little bit.
Curtis has experience with Brenna going, what did I just say? You know what? What I meant to say was this.
Headline number one, UConn dominated Purdue last night and became the first repeat champions in college basketball in 17 years. What's the real headline?
Honestly, they look like they could do it a third time. Did anyone else watch this tournament, the men's tournament, and not think UConn would win?
No, I think almost every bracket in our little company deal had UConn winning. I think Dooley had Baylor winning. Someone had Arizona. I don't think it was Curtis, though. But, yeah, man, they look good. They look good. It was a second-half adjustments for me, man. They knew Edie was going to eat. So what they started doing, they go, look, we're going to guard the perimeter tough. We'll double when he gets the ball inside the paint, make him go to work, but make these other guys shoot that rock. And it was beautiful to watch, man. I told y'all to look at the movement off the ball with UConn last night. I hope that you did, because their motion offense is tough to deal with. I saw Edie huffing and puffing maybe with like 7 minutes left in the first half. I go, there's no way he can play this whole game. He averages about 31 minutes, but it was live or die through Edie, and they let Edie eat. Everyone else was shut down.
Standing in UConn's way next year, we are a year away, so who knows what programs are going to come up. But Duke already atop the leaderboard. Now, you're going to have four number one seeds, but atop the leaderboard in terms of favorites for next year because Curtis.
Cooper Flagg.
Yep.
He's really good.
He also spells his last name in an interesting way.
Is that the kid from Maine?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's nice. I said that I didn't know Curtis rudely pointed out that I failed French, which doesn't even matter. And I said, I would say happy birthday in French, but I don't know. And then someone from Pennsylvania, the 724, sent in how to say it. And my butchered pronunciation for my failed French days is, hey, Curtis, bon anniversaire. Oh, no.
Headline rewrite.
Bon anniversaire. That's French.
I can really feel that, Stacey.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Headline number two, South Carolina and Iowa drew an audience of 18.7 million viewers, the most watched basketball game of any kind since the 2019 NBA Finals. What's the real headline?
Look, guys, take some time today to think about the guys diligently posting who cares on ESPN tweets about the women's game. They're down bad this morning.
Hey, and I honestly didn't think this game was going to draw more than the LSU-Iowa game. So I'm happy that I was wrong, man. 18.7 mil. It's for real, man. But again, we talked about it yesterday. How do you capture this? How do you ride this wave? I think it's important also in a college game that these universities do a better job of highlighting or spotlighting their female athletes as well, because we always get the quarterbacks and the hoopers who are going to go in the lottery pick. Let's do the same with these females, man. It's been fun to watch them.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Seahawks began their offseason program yesterday. What's the real headline?
You know what else begins today? Old dudes complaining about who's in attendance.
Let's go.
Goodness gracious.
Now, first of all, shout out to the olds. Y'all know we love you. We rock with you. It's a funny headline rewrite. And I also, as I was writing it, was thinking of this. Sometimes I do care who's in attendance. Sometimes I do.
I don't care. Not now.
Not right now. But when we get to, let's say, voluntary. I mean, this is voluntary, but
yeah.
You have a new coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
You have a defense that was horrible last year. You have a team that did not make the playoffs. Unless you are working with a personal trainer that you're paying a lot of money for, you know, in your hometown, or unless you are rehabbing an injury, why would you not be there?
Yeah, this is a different situation. I think typically, if Pete Carroll was here and guys and roles were established, that would be different. I think now you got to make a great first impression. So I hope as many guys are here as possible during this period. Now, they're going to be voluntary workouts in the summer, to where I feel like, all right, if you've already connected with your coach, you guys are on the same page, I'm not worried about it. You go ahead and work with your trainer. Make sure you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you get to training camp. You got to be good. But right now, I would hope that 90% of the guys are there at VMAC right
yeah,
now.
We saw photos via the Seahawks official account and their website. They posted this. But we saw photos of Uchenna Nwosu there, who's obviously recovering from injury. And he's another one of those guys where I just wonder, like, what's the X factor heading into this season? Might it be someone like Chenna? I mean, I know we're looking at pieces mm-hmm. that they're going to draft and young guys that they're going to add to this team or guys that they're going to add via free agency, though they didn't add any, like, huge names. But I think we also got to consider some of the guys that were injured last year or missed some time last year that are now returning.
Yeah, it's a different feeling there. I could imagine things are different. I could see a world where it's not. Remember on Thursdays, they get all loud and stuff. Maybe they're quiet. Maybe the hoop isn't there anymore. You have to go into that facility and kind of see what the vibe is going to be with Mike McDonald. I think at least initially. After that, you got your regimen. You communicate with your coaches what the plan is and what you're trying to accomplish. And you work in that way. I wonder what Geno's going to do with this new offense, too. Mm. Or are you going to meet up with the guys in San Diego like Russell Wilson used to do? I think it's important that Geno knows this offense, which I'm sure he's been already been grinding on,
mm-hmm.
but leads when it comes to these workouts and establishing himself once again, because Geno's on a year-by-year type of deal.
Yeah.
Every year he's got to come in, reestablish he's the top dog, and do the little things that quarterbacks do to get the skill guys ready to go. I'm sure he's all over that.
Well, I think it's especially important for Geno because Pete was in your corner. I mean, Pete Carroll, in their press conference that Pete and John gave when they traded Russell Wilson, Geno was not under contract, brought up Geno as leading that competition. He wasn't on the team. That's how confident Pete Carroll was yeah. that Geno could come in and do this thing. Geno got all the first team reps through camp. There was never a true quarterback competition that was happening. Pete believed in him and knew that believing in him would probably be the key to unlocking his confidence and unlocking his role as a leader. Pete's gone.
He out of there. It's a whole new relationship. And it might be, you know, refreshing. It might be good. There are going to be some bumps in the road. And this is when you try to get through the majority of them so that when the team is there for mandatory workouts, it runs as smoothly as possible. But, yeah, you got to get to know this coaching staff, mm-hmm. this offense, the ins and outs. You got to be completely comfortable as a quarterback. You got to get in that huddle and be able to spit the plays out, get everybody on point confidently.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of the deal. Geno knows this. I'm not worried about that.
253, Stacey, it's all right that your French sucks. Your British accent is on point, mate. Thank you. Only a really Cockney accent, though, which unfortunately Curtis can do, too. So that doesn't make me feel better.
Did you see the thick Oklahoma accent one?
No, what was that?
Our 425, our French teacher had a thick Oklahoma accent, and that's exactly how she would have said, bon anniversary.
Bon anniversary. Everyone, happy birthday in French. That's what that is. Francois. I don't actually know.
Parlez-vous, Francois.
Je m'appelle. Stacy. That's all I remember. Je m'appelle. That's it. That's as far. And I remember jambon is ham.
Random.
Well, because it was one of those things that was in a, like, you'd say, what was it? It's not vous, Desiree. Je Desiree. I think that's like how you would order something. Un jambon. So you'd like pick random food to order. And I was like, a ham.
An entire ham.
I was so bad at that class. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Well, Scott Service didn't just talk about Castillo. In fact, this morning we heard plenty from the skipper on this team and where they're at right now with Brock and Salk. Don't go anywhere. That's next.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Happy Tuesday. I have some unhappy stats for you. The Mariners to begin the season 27th in OPS, 26th in runs scored, 24th in average. They've struck out more than every team besides the Dodgers. Unfortunately, the Dodgers have played two more games than the Mariners. So Seattle not in a great spot offensively. And as you know, the starting pitching hasn't been everything we expected it to be. Scott Service was on with Brock and Salk this morning, Bump, and he talked about the start to the season, answered some tough questions. So let's start with how he thought the season would start. Hint, he thought it would be a little hotter.
I guess I'm a little surprised that we did not come out of the gates a little hotter. It's probably the most excited I've been about getting the season going, leaving spring training. Oftentimes when you leave spring training, you have a got a lot of question marks. You know, how's the bullpen going to play out, or certain spots in your lineup? And I really felt leaving spring training, we would come out of the gates, you know, better than we have. But it is what it is. You know, we have been hard to get much rhythm going.
Bump, did you think the same, that they would be leaving spring training, entering the season a little bit hotter than they are?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to be a little bit hotter than what they are.
Reframed, it's hard to be as bad as they have been to start the season.
The worst when
I'm
it comes
that they are
to striking out. 28% strikeout rate. It's the worst in the league. Last year, they were 25%, so I guess they got a little better, starting off a little better. But, no, I expected more. I didn't expect them to come out and be just an offensive juggernaut. That's never what they've been. Every now and then, they'll post up, 10, 11 runs, and you're feeling good about the situation. But I felt that you would be able to count on the arms a bit more, because we know the struggles that Seattle's had over the past few years when it comes to swinging the bat. So, but it's been a combination. They've been bad at a lot of things. They've been bad at, obviously, in the box. They've been bad on the mound. Defensively, there have been some struggles. They just, all around, they haven't been great. So it's easy. Yeah, I thought they'd be a bit more better than what they are right now, because it's hard to be worse in some of these categories. Because we look at the profile of the player, and I think it was fair to have higher expectations. I think Service was right to think that his team's going to come out hotter, because the way they built this team was to eliminate strikeouts and to put the ball in play, and they just haven't been able to do that. The way they built this team was to be able to rely on the arms. The guys come out and dominating. They haven't been able to do that. We've seen, maybe one or two dominant performances this year out of pitchers. We had Miller had one, and I want to say, I think, did Walter have
was
one?
Kirby?
Was it Kirby? I think it was Kirby. Either way, we've seen two. We've been through this rotation two times and some change at this point. So, yes, easy answer to that question. I expected better, and we're just not getting that right now.
Now, of course, he was quick to calm everyone down.
You know, myself, coaching staff, and everybody involved around our team, because I do not think we're playing up to capabilities yet. I say all that, and we're a few games under 500. We have a lot of baseball to go, but I do think we're playing, or capable of playing much better for sure.
I think we're capable of playing much better. That being said, we're just a couple games under 500 with a lot of season left. And Bump, we talked yesterday, and this will be a conversation for probably the first two months of the season. This back and forth kind of thing you do as a baseball fan and a Mariners fan. As a baseball fan, you understand that the sport requires patience, both of fans and also of its players. As a Mariners fan, you feel that your patience is draining for myriad reasons, but primarily because you have not seen your team in a World Series. You're the only club that hasn't. You've seen your team get off to slow starts despite being promised better rosters. You've seen your team not be everything that you want it to, and you saw your team not make the playoffs for 21 years.
Yeah.
So the patience is wearing thin, and yet patience is required of baseball fans. It's an interesting kind of balance.
It is. It's the many battles throughout the season that kind of affect you, really. Because at the end of the season, you'll be able to look back. You're going to look at battles and say, all right, what battles did we win? What battles didn't we win? The battle that concerns me the most right now is the top of the order. They're just not performing the way that the top of the order should perform. And it's almost... it's a tease, man. You get a bomb from JP late in the game. You get a bomb from Cal, and you're set up to have maybe Rojas be the hero of the game. I don't think anyone thought he was going to come through in that moment. No disrespect to my dude, because he's had a decent season at the plate, but you felt like you've just been here before. So they'll give you enough to say, okay, this is what they can be. All right. Obviously, JP's not known for his power. He's added that over the past couple of years. You look at Cal Raleigh. For some reason, he owns Toronto. He plays his best baseball when he's in Toronto. He gives you something. But we're still waiting for Julio to have his moment. He did have a moment with the walk-off, I believe single was. But we're just looking for consistency, man. And we're waiting for it. And honestly, I can kind of see it in Julio, because he's hitting the ball hard. I mean, that's a great indicator that eventually this thing is going to turn. Polanco has been playing decent as of late. It's just not enough. They're not putting it together. So it's an incomplete puzzle right now. You have all the pieces lined up. You see where things should be. The sky of the puzzle is always the hardest part, right, where all the blues fit in and all that stuff. You got all the pieces. You're just not putting it all together right now. You might not have, excuse me, let me rephrase that before someone jumps on me, okay? You don't have the pieces that maybe the Yankees have, okay? But you have enough pieces to complete a puzzle and be competitive, and we're not seeing that yet.
Scott Service was asked what might be contributing to a slow offensive start this year. And Brock and Salk brought up, look, you guys kind of had a new offensive approach. Could that be a contributor with the slow start?
It could. I think we are, you know, how we go about our approach each night. I actually think it's in a better spot now than it's ever been. But again, you can have all the meetings and talk about all the things you want at 5 o'clock. When the lights come on at 7, you've got to go out and execute that, you know. And the last night's game, for example, you know, we didn't get the leadoff hitter on in any of the 9 innings. You know, you get the leadoff hitter on in an inning, you have like a 54% chance of scoring a run that inning. So if you don't, it gets much more challenging. Now you're relying on an extra base hit, a home run, something like that. So, you know, doing those little things, talking about, you know, in rhythm, you know, so you get some flow.
Hey, JP, get on base, my guy. And now we've counted on JP doing that, and he has not been, you know, your worst batter so far, but the top of your lineup has not really been delivering. Julio has been underperforming. JP, while he does have 2 home runs now this season, has been overall underperforming in terms of the walks that he's typically drawn. And Jorge Polanco's just now heating up, but was obviously off to a really cold start for the season. Once you get those three going, I do think you're looking at a different roster. We're just kind of waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, we're waiting. Like I mentioned, Rodriguez, Polanco, JP 1-for-10 against the Blue Jays. 2 through 5, they were 0-for, man. Like, that's not going to be enough. And he says it's a new approach to the offense, right? And I think this approach is what almost every baseball team wants to be. Just put the ball in play. What really is a new approach is not swing for home runs as much as you used to. I understand that. To not strike out as much as you used to. I understand that. But the fundamentals of baseball is to put the ball into play, put runners on base so you have a chance to score. They're just not doing that. The top of the order just has to be better. Ty France needs to be moved into the top of the order. I mean, goodness gracious. How many times are we going to see this dude
3-for-4 do what he does? Last night.
Let him move him around. I don't see the knock on moving Ty France around at this point. Now this is where I think Service does his thing, man. Just switch that order up a little bit and let's provide a little spark.
I agree. That's a really good idea. We are going to stick with the Mariners before we jump into football coming up at 11. What's behind the increase in pitcher injuries? Excuse me. We've seen quite a bit to start this season. Jeff Passan of ESPN joined Brock and Salk this morning and had his own theories. And yes, of course, Brock and Salk did also ask him about the Mariners' start to the season, whether or not he's concerned in any way. Don't go anywhere. It's coming your way next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
All right, we are sticking with the Mariners before we jump to 4 down territory at 11:15. What wide receiver can have a breakout year? That's one of the conversations we're going to have. Levi Weaver is going to talk to us a bit about some of these pitching injuries, but Jeff Passan has his own theories. He was on with Brock and Salk this morning, so let's get to some of this conversation. He also had plenty to say about the Mariners. We're going to cover both topics here. So first, if there's anything that can fix these pitching injuries, what might it be, Jeff?
There is no silver bullet. There is no panacea. There's just better process and better ideals. And the way that guy's pitched right now, it's very simple. It's just, it does not lead to long-term health. And like I hate to bring it home here, but the one thing I think we do know pretty well at this point, don't know if it's causative, do know pretty well that it's correlated. The harder you throw, the likelier you are to get hurt. And the Seattle Mariners got a lot of hard throwing pitchers.
Yep.
I mean, a lot.
Am I judging Jeff Passan for saying panacea instead of cure-all? Yes. Yes, I am, because I think he's lovably pretentious. However, he's also not wrong. I agree with Jeff. I think that this isn't necessarily because of a pitch clock or because of any specific changes this year. This is the way that pitching is now, and it starts young.
You know who hurts their hamstrings a lot? guys who run fast. You know, I mean, he's right. The harder you throw, the more likely you're going to get banged up. Now, I hope that doesn't happen, but throwing a baseball is one of the most unnatural movements in sports. Why do you think softball pitchers can start every single day and be fine? Because that underhand motion is more natural. That's why bowling, it doesn't really hurt, because it's just a natural movement. It is what it is. And now you got these guys who are throwing hard, and that ball is moving 6 to 7 inches from the right to the left and vice versa, right? So now you're putting your angles, when you look at your elbow and all that stuff, your shoulder, in these stressful positions. So naturally it's going to happen. It's almost like a rite of passage when a pitcher gets Tommy John. It's like, finally, okay, you got it. Mm-hmm. Now we can repair it and we can move on, and hopefully it doesn't happen again. He's right. But what do you want them to do? Not be themselves, not throw the ball hard, not try to get these guys to chase. That's just where the game is now. That's where this pitching staff is. So it's, even though it all makes sense, I don't think they're going to tell their guys, hey, ease up a little bit. No, be you. You go out there, throw the ball hard, get it moving, and get these guys to chase.
All right, let's get to the Mariners. He's not ready to write off Seattle yet.
I'm not there yet. We do this every year, guys. Sometimes it's the Mariners. Sometimes it's other teams that start off really bad. This may be cold comfort, but the fact that they're 4-7 when, like, everybody on the team but Ty France can't hit right now is actually a good thing, because you're right. By run differential, I believe they've got the fourth worst run differential in baseball right now, and the other three teams are really bad.
I like that Jeff's answer to whether or not he's worried about the Mariners is, silver lining, you're lucky to have 4 wins.
Yeah.
With how poorly you've been playing as a team and with how horrendous your offense has been, you are fortunate that you have 2 more wins than I anticipated you to.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think it's going to be hard for people in this area to kind of view it that way, because you've been stuck in this dream for a bunch of years now. But again, I always like when we get an outside perspective, because we're so close to this team. We're going to nitpick, and that's our job, to nitpick and to digest everything that has happened. But you're right. You got one bat that's hot right now. Mm-hmm. You got one arm that's doing something right now. The defense ain't on point. Yet you got 4 games. And look, you could still finish this road trip 500 if you win these next two. You win these next two, we might feel different about this ball club and where they're going. Come on home, get this hometown cooking, and maybe you'll be good to go. But yeah, thank you, Passon, for that. A good perspective.
All right, let's stick with the Mariners here. One of the most concerning things to start the season has not just been that strikeouts are up after we thought that this roster would look different. It has not just been that the bats are cool after we were hoping they would be more consistent. It has been that the one thing that has been consistent, the one thing that has been great, and the one thing you could hang your hat on, your starting pitching, hasn't been elite. You have not looked like one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, which is, considering what you have offensively, what you need to be in order to make the playoffs, to make a World Series. Jeff Passon on why he thinks pitching could bounce back.
Go and look at the differences between ERA and fielding independent pitching, which is it's a pretty simple stat, actually, that takes into account the walks, strikeouts, and home runs that you've allowed. It essentially tries to and does a pretty decent job of predicting future performance. And when there's a big gap between ERA and FIP, that means that there's going to be some positive regression to the mean. And I believe every Mariner starter has a higher ERA, in Luis Castillo's case, a significantly higher ERA than his FIP, which means it's probably gonna get better.
I'm encouraged by that.
Hey, I like when the numbers be numbered and making sense.
You know what I mean?
You know, just like, look down the road. All right, this is the trend. This is what we're seeing right now. But data says that eventually you should trend in the right direction. That's why I love and I hate baseball at the same time. Because you got all these stats that say, calm down now, be patient, because you should go in this direction. But if you don't, then you challenge all the data that you've seen throughout the year. That's one of the reasons why I love and hate baseball, is because you can find reason to be optimistic, and you should when you play 162 games. So thank you, Passon, for that. Again, another great perspective to calm M's fans down.
All right, let's see. I have time to get to a couple more here. Let's talk just about Julio. He's obviously, when you look at your lineup, your saving grace. You look at Julio and you go, Julio, not only do you need to be the best player, You're capable of doing that. You're capable of being one of the best players in baseball. He has been streaky, though. It has not been a good start to the season for him. And that streakiness has kind of popped up over the course of his career. Don't forget that last year he really struggled to start the season before just going on this, like, godlike run in August where he was just putting up insane numbers. Will Julio be a streaky player throughout his career?
You know, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot changing the body, but there are players, Mike, who... that's who they are. I'm not there with Julio yet because I still think he's too young. I don't think that I don't think he's a finished product by any means. And I think there is, I think consistency is something that can be learned, and that he's still trying to figure out some of the ways to do that.
I often forget, maybe because he's been a topic of conversation since obviously he was a prospect, how young Julio is and how much development there is still to be had for his career.
Yeah, he's got a long ways to go, and he's still considered an all-star. He is an all-star. They even considered, right? Back-to-back years, he's been an all-star, and he's still learning. And again, I'm going to say it, it's still early in the season. He's trying to figure it out. That's why I look back at spring training and I think, you know, should they get more at-bats? Should the Julios and all these guys get more at-bats during spring training? So you can feel like they're hitting the ground running, because the first part of the season always feels like, at least for this team, is that they're just still trying to figure their swing out, trying to figure their approach out. You have a plan on paper, but going out and executing is a totally different thing. That's what it's coming down to, honestly. These guys just got to execute. These guys got to swing at pitches they're supposed to swing at. The pitchers got to hit their spots. Defensively, you got to be on point. It comes down to executing. So, again, we have a whole bunch of numbers to support why they should execute, but when you just keep it 100, they just ain't getting the job done.
An Oakland A's conspiracy theory, 9 surprising MLB opening week storylines, and an awful weekend for arm injuries. Levi Weaver of The Athletic joins us next to talk about all things baseball and Mariners. Don't go anywhere.